se puede hacer. Small boy walked down a city street, and hope was in his eyes as he searched the faces of the people he'd meet for one he could recognize.
You are now tuned in to the unique human experience, and we're coming in full stride, bringing you episode number 55. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. This is Giants Amongst Us. It's a place where we share in that unique human experience, and this is where you're going to hear real stories that are told by real people. People just like yourself. These are raw testaments, true, genuine examples of what the human spirit is capable of. The resilient human spirit. This is about overcoming obstacles. This is about transcending struggles and challenges and creating new experiences for oneself. Self-discovery. It isn't a destination, but a journey, and we're here to take that ride together. So if this is your first time tuning in, kick your feet up. Please do stay a while. And if you've been here before, thank you for checking back in with us. We've got a great conversation today. Sarah joins us, and she's got a story to tell.
Between having seen those videos about mind control and then that huge trauma, along with hitting puberty, I was angry and hurt and so lost. And it only took me about 3 more months, and the leader made the mistake of just being extremely overbearing and trying to dictate what I did right at that exact moment. I said, bye, Mom, got on my bicycle, and I pedaled down that dirt road for 10 kilometers or whatever to the nearest gas station. I had no plan, and I walked out. I was done. I was like, I am done with you. 13.
Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, this is Sarah and her story. This is where we share in the unique human experience, and I'm happy to introduce to you the lady of the hour, Sarah. I want to thank you once again. We had a nice conversation before we started recording, but I want to thank you once again for taking time out of your day. You could have been anywhere. You could have been doing anything, but we're here having a sit down and sharing a conversation. How are you doing? How's it going?
It's going great. Yeah, I really appreciate you having me and sharing your time with me as well.
Absolutely. I'm going to say it again. The pleasure is mine. Like I said, we had a great conversation, and you caught me up to speed on some of your backstory, some of the things that you went through in life and how it made and shaped you to the person you are today. But I'm interested to hear more about it. I just want to, because I told you beforehand that I had your WordPress pulled up, just to preface it all and just quote a couple of lines from that. I thought it was a good way to bring you on and then let you get into your story and kind of unpack some of your journey and the things that you had to go through, the things you had to persevere through, and how you were able to just create the changes in your life and to move out of some things that weren't as healthy, or it wasn't a healthy situation for you. And this is on your WordPress website, and I just liked how you put it. Where are we at? Okay, right here it says, a child of, and it says, is me, a child of a commune, a youth of the street, a woman trying to find her way. I have a story like we all do. I'm trying to share it bit by bit, memory by memory. And this was found on your WordPress website. And with that being said, Sarah, just to break the ice get some of this emotion. You mind sharing a bit of where you come from and how it was for you growing up?
Sure. Okay. Well, I was born and raised in a religious commune. I reference it as a cult, actually, in my memoir, primarily because it had just one leader. You know, they followed one leader, and then, of course, there was an author who then dictated, you know, how we lived our lives very explicitly, right down to what we ate, when we ate, when we slept, how much we slept, what we wore, the segregation, the proper age groups for marriage for men and women. It was a very strict, solemn upbringing. I mean, some of it had really good ideas. We grew our own food and lived off the land, and I mean, I love that now, you know. But on the other hand, when you have a commune like that, predators go live there, or people who are narcissists, or, you know, you get a lot of problem people as well. And when you're a child born and raised in that, you don't get equipped with the tools and skills that you need to protect yourself. So that can make it hard. But that's how I started my life. And then it went from there.
Now, you were brought up, this was your parents that were involved with it. And of course, you were a product of that because of the involvement of your parents. Were there a lot of other children your age that were also part of the commune?
You know, there were, I mean, not a lot, maybe half a dozen. Between birth and being 13, I lived in three different communes throughout British Columbia. I grew up in Canada. And so, you know, we lived at one place until I was about seven. And then my father felt God telling him to go to another one. Same religion. It was based off the Seventh-day Adventist Church. So then we moved, and there were a few kids there, but there was no school. Like, there was no education system for young kids. I did get homeschooled with my ABCs and things like that when I was seven, but it was very haphazard education, in part just due to my mother's mental health and or lack thereof at the time. And some families did not want their children playing with other kids. So I had very limited socialization with kids my age. We weren't allowed sleepovers because they didn't believe in that.
So it was like everybody just in their own little bubble, but still part of a commune.
Yeah, you worship together, you work the fields together, but then you go home and you're, yeah, it's very segregated.
Did they have you, the young ones, did they have you guys doing some hard labor? Or?
Yeah, I worked in a sawmill when I was 11, a dunnage mill. And then I went from that to working in the cafeteria when I was 12, cooking from scratch. I will probably never make pierogies because I made pierogies from scratch for like 40 people.
Wow. You said 11, 12 years old?
11, 12 years old. Yep.
Wow. Yep. You're cooking for an army, a platoon.
Yeah. And then you clean after. And because I was a true child, I didn't feel like cleaning one day after, and I squirted soap all over the floor with some water so I could just run and slide, like kind of make a slide on the linoleum.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a lot of fun, but then I had to clean it.
Slip and slide.
That was a lot of work. Soap does not just like wash up easily.
Wow. You know, I've heard people that are involved in certain these high controlled groups, and sometimes the schedule, I've heard what some people talking about, could be very, very rigid, like where they have you from 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning till who knows in the evening time, where you're doing Bible studies, or you're learning verses and your prayer, or, you know, just one thing after the other to kind of keep you occupied to where there's no room to wiggle around and get your hands into something else. Was that how it was?
Exactly. Yeah, it was like that. And it's also so you don't have time for free thought.
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. I actually have I can't think of the word, loving perimenopause. I have a post on WordPress. I believe it's called The Best Gift My Father Could Have Given Me. And what it was is back in the late 80s, they had some studies that they did, I think documentaries on VHS about mind control and the communes and the mind control that they did, which was similar to what you described, where you're segregated. You can't communicate with anybody that doesn't live in that community. You're not allowed time alone. You're kept busy. The diet.
Control of information.
Yeah, control of information. A bit of sleep deprivation, a bit of emotional deprivation. And that's how you make a person malleable, right, to your way of thinking. And then you do this long enough, they start coming around to it and going, oh, well, okay, yeah, that does sound right. And so he watched these and let me sit and watch them with him. And we didn't have, television and things like that. So this was something we did in the chapel on the school TV and VCR over a Christmas break. And he passed away actually a couple months after that. But it made me think like, hey, that's a lot like us.
And how old were you?
12.
Okay, wow. But you had there was a thought right there. There was a little light bulb went off. Wait a minute. This sounds and looks very familiar.
Yeah. And it's carried me through life. I've done, in my 30s, I did some self-help groups. And I was like, hey, I know this line of crap you're selling me here. I've been there.
When we're in a fix or challenges or we have problems, whatever, or even the trauma, there's always a lesson to be had.
There is, yeah. As long as we're willing to see it and hear it. And I think that was a big part of why I wrote my memoir and why I'm working on the second one is we all face like hardship. It's all different. We all have a different story, but many of us are lonely or struggling with things or afraid of change or whatever we're facing. And it's like, hey, we can do it. I did it. Here's my story. Maybe some of this will speak to you and help you because we all face hardships all through life.
Yeah. There's no escaping that. That's one thing that's going to be for certain. We're going to deal with a few shakes and bumps along the road. Like I said, if I ask something that you don't feel comfortable asking, you can go ahead. But I'm just out of curiosity. I'm curious, did you experience abuse under the name of God while you were involved in this cult? Was there physical abuse or emotional abuse for sure? Psychological abuse?
Emotional abuse for sure, yeah. I was very fortunate. So there was definitely some male predators at, especially at that last school that I was at. I call it a school, the commune. And I was really fortunate that it didn't get taken too far. I don't know, even starting is too far, but still. But there were other people that it did go too far and they were afraid to say anything. And after I walked away, I did go, well, I didn't go. The one of the girls that she tried to run away because she was just so tired of the abuse. And of course, they caught her and sent her back to her family. And she had, I think, 3 generations of abusive men in her family, not counting the people that were at the community. And it was just growing up, it was a given. There was just the knowledge, like you don't be alone with that man, or you just make sure that you're not alone with that man. And it was acceptable. Which is not acceptable. So, but anyway, so she, of course, with the police picking her up as a runaway and returning her, and she was like, I don't want to go back because this is happening to me. And so then they tried to get her help. And out of fear, she recanted her story, but also named me as one of the other victims of some of these men. So I actually went all the way to court with it. And that is, it's actually that some of that's in my memoir. It was terrifying. I was 15, 16 by then. I was living with a family at the time in a small northern community. And the woman that had taken me under her wing, bless her, she was so supportive and really helped give me strength. And so I did that. But because it was my word against this person's word, It didn't go further, like there was no conviction. But he was also an auxiliary police officer, this one person in particular. And so he lost his ability to, you know, be an auxiliary police officer, which sounds small, but it's not, because that's when someone is like waving this piece of control over you. You know, like, I'm a police officer, I'm a part of the law, you have to listen to me, I can make things terrible for you, for your family.
Authority figure, huh?
Yeah. And he was investigated and taken to court many times over the decades. And then the year that I published my book, 2023, they finally, two young sisters in their very early teens at a small town here in British Columbia, they were successful in, and he ended up being convicted. I mean, it's only one man out of all of them, but I mean, you know, it took decades, but finally.
And what was it? I don't know if you were able to follow a lot of the cases along throughout that time, but I wonder what it was that was always the reason they weren't able to convict them. Was it just, like you said, some of the victims, they recant out of fear?
Well, and there's no evidence. How do you prove that?
It's just by word, yeah. Right? You're going by somebody's word.
Yeah. And you're in a community where there's no electronics, there's no like worldly anything. You have a lot of these young women who are like just raised to be, you
know. Radios allowed?
No.
Whoa. Okay. So the one-eyed devil is for that. That's out of the picture. The TV, the boob tube is gone. And also the radio.
The radio. There's no newspaper. There's no.
Well, that comes down to the whole, it's a control of information, right? You want to know, you want to control what comes in. You want to control what goes out.
Yeah. And when we did go to town, it was supervised. We went in groups. It was maybe twice a year. They knew us.
Wow.
Because we had like, you know, it was no makeup. Girls, women didn't cut their hair. You were segregated, male and female. We wore long flowing skirts. So if it was winter, you had that over top of your pants or your snow pants. When I swam in a skirt. So I drowned well.
Like, swim like a rock. Straight to the bottom.
Yeah, right?
Wow. That's a scary thing. I mean, talk about a cat with nine lives. Oh. You know, Sarah, I know you brought it up and this was a while back, but this whole idea when you said you were watching the, was it CBS with your father?
It was a VHS videos. He rented documentaries. Yeah.
A VHS. When something went off in your head and you say, wow, this kind of looks and sounds familiar. Was that like the seed that was planted in you to where eventually in time, or I don't know how long it took from that to where you started to try to seek out ways to just get the hell out of there?
Well, it did. So that would have been December. And then I actually would have just turned 13. And then my father actually tragically passed away 3 months later.
Oh, sorry.
And so I was just horribly distraught, like horribly distraught. It was just a horrifying accident. And I lost everything that seemed normal after that, because we had homeheading is how they called it. So the commune was also a boarding school. So for kids that would go to high school, it wasn't an accredited school. So they didn't know this. They were there going to school, but they actually didn't get a diploma if they were going to go to college after. I shouldn't laugh, but I mean, like, really? Because they graduated and went to go to college after, and they had to redo high school. So.
Oh, okay. So, that was the ticket.
Right. But so we had boys living in our home when I grew up. So we had these teenage boys living in, because we had huge, you know, three-story houses with five bedrooms upstairs. And so I had loads of brothers growing up. All these boys that came, their families didn't, it was their ultimatum. You go to the army or you go homeless or you go to this religious commune, right? These were unhappy young men. So they lived in our home. So when my father died, like, we went camping. And he fell off a cliff. We were rolling rocks. And I come home, and not only is my father dead, all my brothers are gone. I'm now in this huge house that's empty with my mom. It was like the loss of everything. and the preacher wow. said it was God's will. And I said, F you, and stormed out, because I was, screw God, if that's his will, okay? I do not, that is not the thing you say mm-hmm. to a little girl, you know? And so that, between having seen those videos about mind control and then that huge trauma along with hitting puberty, I was angry and hurt and so lost. And it only took me about 3 more months, and the leader made the mistake of just being extremely overbearing and trying to dictate what I did right at that exact moment. And I said, bye, Mom, got on my bicycle. And I pedaled down that dirt road for 10 kilometers or whatever to the nearest gas station. I had no plan, but, and I walked out. I was done. I was like, I am done with you.
At 13 years old. Wow. Talk about just, I mean, you're getting in the wind. You have no clue how it's going to work. You just were pushed to your, and some people are going to roll over. They're just going to roll out. And you chose to yeah. roll out at 13. I mean, and that's all probably, I mean, it's not planned. You're doing this on a whim. Just, you were pushed completely to the edge where you have no idea what's next, what's to come, how I'm going to survive. I mean, what's going through your head? You're probably a mixed bag of emotions.
I sure was. I then went, uh-oh.
10 kilometers. That's not just around the corner.
No. And wow. Like, this is Northern BC. You have bears and you don't.
Oh, you have wildlife to deal with.
Yeah.
On like, top of the elements.
You got the 2-legged kind, the 4-legged kind, the elements. And I was like, oh, what did I do?
Wow.
And, you know, and I managed, and like through my.
But you were willing to take your chances. That's how fed up you were.
I was not going back.
My goodness.
And my mom just let me. She was like, okay, see you later.
You think maybe she had a feeling that, okay, you're not going to go too far. You're going to turn around and come back.
You know, I would be curious what she would say to that, because I ended up calling someone who came and got me from the gas station on the side of the road, and we went back and packed a suitcase, and she just was like, okay, here's a suitcase you can have. Pack your stuff. Off you go.
Wow.
Yeah. And then after about 6 months, I was like, okay, like I miss my, I had baby brothers and sister and you know, and I love my mom, and I wanted to go home. And so I was home visiting, and I wanted to go back and just live with my mom and live on that commune and everything. And so they had to put it to a vote with the leaders, and they said no. And she was like, okay, you can't live here. You can go live, we'll find somewhere else for you to live. Like, she was okay with it.
Where were you staying at up until then, those 6 months when you were out on your own? Were you just floating in the wind?
Yeah, the first few years, my mom worked through the church, the religious network system. And so she had me staying with a family, actually, who lived in the home I had originally been born in. So I had my old bedroom from when I was a little girl living in Southern BC, still on a religious commune, but I wasn't allowed to, you know, go to school. They'd had a school there for the kids. I was kept segregated and under watch, and they searched my room regularly. And I worked in a bakery. I worked 2 a.m. until I think around noon or so. I'd just walk through the forest and terrified. I was singing. I was singing like, oh, Jesus Loves Me was the song I knew. And I was just I was terrified. I was walking about 1.5 miles down the mountainside to the bakery with, like, we didn't have headlamps then. We didn't have flashlights. There was no cell phones.
Wow.
We're walking by the moonlight.
Just by the moonlight. That was it in was, the stars. Hopefully the stars are twinkling tonight.
Right? It was so scary.
My, that's no easy.
Oh, that's what I was saying, so that the wildlife wouldn't
that's
come
no
eat
cakewalk. Me. My good, yeah. I Wow, I can't even imagine. And this is, you're still 13.
Still 13. I turned 14 there. Yeah.
In the elements, you have wildlife. That I can't even imagine. With, I don't know, did you come across any wildlife at any throughout that time? Any bears or anything get a little too close, rubbed elbows with you? Or
yeah, walking back after the shift, I was walking back on the road as opposed through the little mountain trail, and a mountain lion was off the side of the road looking, and it just kind of looked at me and then turned around and loped off into the forest. And I made it back in record time. And the lady of the house, she says, "You look like you saw a ghost."
Yeah.
I was like, "I'm lucky I'm not a ghost."
Well, I mean, someone had their hand on you throughout these close calls and these wanderings through the wilderness and the wild alone at such a young age. Wow. That's wild. That's wild.
Yeah, in the wild.
Yeah, in the wild. Yeah. But so, okay. So they didn't, at first I had the impression that they completely cut you off and you were off, but so you were still part of the commune, but you were under watch, you were high surveillance and monitored and you know, they were just keeping an eye on you to make sure you don't kill the morale. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I was sent to a different one. And then they were actually a foster family, and I wasn't aware of this. Some of their foster children have reached out to me since I wrote my book, just thanking me for sharing my story and telling me that they had lived with them and had problems with this family and stuff. But I wasn't aware at the time, or I just didn't remember because the trauma was, I was having panic attacks. I didn't realize it. I'd put a Bible on my chest because I couldn't breathe. I would wake up at night and I couldn't breathe. Just having nightmares of my, you know, my father falling off the cliff and just how that looked, you know, that was, it was a bad death. And I'd seen his autopsy report and stuff, right? So there's probably a lot I don't remember. I know there's a lot I don't remember. And then I went to see my mom at Christmas and they were like, "Nope, don't bring her back. We don't want her here. She has too many problems." At least that's what my mom told me they said. I don't know what they said, but that's what she told me they said. And that just made me angrier because I'm like, you guys created me. I was born and raised in this kind of community. You created me. What do you mean you can't deal with me? Like, how dare you?
You have the ones who later on in years as an adult, they come to get involved in cults or these highly controlled groups for whatever reason it is, when there's various reasons. And then you have people that were born into it like yourself. But at a very young age, it wasn't, because there are people, I'm not comparing anybody with anybody, but there are people, they were born into it and it takes them years. I mean, in their 20s, 30s, and they finally have the courage. For whatever reason, they're not able to go. It could be the fear, just stepping into the unknown, because everything outside of that commune is deemed worldly. That's against you. That's the devil. This is everything that is against us, and you don't want that. They don't want you, but you really took a leap of faith. Did you still have faith in you, even never mind the things that you went through living in the commune? But was there some kind of a spirituality or a relationship with a higher being that you had throughout that time?
I mean, I didn't disregard it, but I certainly didn't have faith that if I had said my prayers, I'd get taken care of. I didn't have a faith like that, you know, because you don't know what the plan's going to be. It's obvious that trauma's going to happen. So, and it's not like I was getting guided down really safe, healthy paths by this point. So, you know, I was like, it's great. He loves
everything
me.
Was to the contrary.
Yeah.
I asked you that because there's some people that after something like that, people have different reactions, but some they might get angry, they get upset, you know, they feel like everything now was meant to, in some way, shape, or form, meant to control or manipulate or persuade or just control your perception of reality. So that could be tricky to navigate, especially later on in life with what you went through, the trauma, and to be able to maybe let down your guard and trust again. You can feel like everybody's against you and nobody's listening to it, and really make you feel insignificant in the world.
I did feel very insignificant in the world. It actually caused a lot of depression. When I was 16, I went to Montreal, and I had battled depression already, but I went to Montreal, and you have to bear in mind the towns I lived in. When I was like 14, 15, I lived in a town of, I think, 5,000 people. That was the biggest town I lived in after being in a commune, was 5,000 people, which is quite small. So I went to Montreal, and, you know, that's a huge city. And I, you know, it's pavement as far as I could walk. I walked so far that my feet hurt the next day because it's different. There's no give like walking on dirt, you know, which I learned. So they had a subway. So I learned how to ride the subway. I rode the subway to the very end. And then I went out and found a building I could go in to climb to the top. And as far as I could see were buildings. And it didn't matter where I went on that subway and what building I went up in. It was just buildings, like, and I'm talking like apartment buildings and high rises, and it's just people. But when you walk down the street, nobody knows each other, you know, nobody knows your name, nobody cares about you. You're just another grain of sand that's going to get swept away and forgotten with the tide. And I found that horribly depressing at the time. It was a huge struggle. I was like, you know, never mind God and humanity, like, there's so many of us, but how does one of us matter?
Yeah. You have a sense of community. Yeah. Even if, like you said, there were some good things involved in what you were doing. Like you probably had a very good way to sustain yourself without depending on anybody else, because you learned these certain skills and these trades and how to put your hands to the soil and garden and grow your own food and that kind of thing. And then you're in the city. And yeah, like you said, it's just everybody pretty much is in their own world. And you lose that sense of community, I think, in a big city. Definitely.
You do. You have to really put yourself out there, like maybe more than in a small town. I mean, but even in a small town, but you have to put yourself out there then. You have to, you know, say hi. Take that chance of talking to a stranger, making a friend, joining a group or an activity. That I didn't know those things, you know, like about groups or activities, but, you know, and try something new in order to build a community that you're going to feel a part of and want to be a part of with other people.
What helped you along the way when you were dealing with your depression, when you were feeling insignificant, and then even all of the emotional and psychological trauma that you went through with being in a high controlled environment where you're every word is watched and recorded in a way, even if it's not with a device, but they're listening and they're taking note of it and they're making sure you don't step too far off the, you know, off the lines. You have to stay in that box and you can't go too far. How did you start to work through some of that baggage?
Well, I did it in a really unhealthy manner for a few years and did a lot of drugs. Well, I didn't do a lot of drugs. I smoked a lot of pot. Okay.
Okay. Right.
I knew the other drugs, you try them once and you might never, ever be.
The wacky tobacco.
Yeah. Because, you know, I was, it was so hand to mouth. None of my work experience, you know, whether it was working in a market gardens, growing carrots, or working in a sawmill when I was 11, or bakery at, wow, you know, 13. That's not a, you can't put that on a resume. And I knew this, but, you know, see, here I am 16, 17, 18. And I'm like, huh, nobody's going to believe this. This is not a legitimate, you know.
I could show you better than I can tell you.
Right.
I could run a sawmill better than you.
So I really struggled, like, with having a place to live and having money because I had no workable job skills, which kind of started to make me angry. You know, my mother didn't want me. I couldn't get into foster care because she wouldn't sign me over. So by the time I turned 18, I had very low self-esteem, and I started smoking the wacky tobacco because that makes you feel happy.
And we're going to make a poem out of that one. The wacky tobacco always makes me feel happy.
Exactly. That's exactly it. Right. And I wanted to forget the pain. I wanted nothing to do with those people. I didn't belong anywhere. You know, I didn't belong to anyone, you know, and I drank a little bit here and there, although I didn't really like that because I found that it wasn't safe. I remember I got drunk. I was with a friend of mine and, you know, I drank too much. So I was tired and she was like, oh, you can sleep here in so-and-so's bed because we were at these boys' apartment. She's like, you're safe. And I went, no, actually, no, I'm not safe. I need to leave.
You had enough sense. You had enough wits.
Nothing will happen to me. So I didn't really like drinking, and I went through a couple years of just, you know, trying to forget all the rejection from my mother, all the pain, all the things that had happened to me over the years. There's some of it in the book that I haven't gotten into, and it's just, they can read about it. It's traumatizing. I cried a lot writing the book, like a lot. And
did that help you? I mean, I'd like you to continue on, but like with the emotional release, because I'm learning a lot about this too, just dealing with trauma and different ways that we store it in our body. And one big way that they say is when we do allow ourselves to release these emotions, that can be a real good step towards healing in a lot of different ways when we do that. Did that help? Did it feel like that was something that was you needed to do, just kind of purge yourself of a lot of these emotions and traumas that you kind of stored and kept inside?
It didn't feel like it. No, it didn't. But no? Okay. After the fact, like now that it's all done and I'm done going over it and over it, because you have to edit it and re-edit it and go through beta readers. But after the fact, and I don't know if this has to do partly with age and maturity, but I find that there's definitely a better sense of understanding and acceptance and self-love for the younger person that I was. And I didn't have some of that clarity. But again, some of that might have to do with being in my fourth decade, that I feel like I wouldn't have had some of this clarity maybe in my 20s. If I was trying to write it, you know, so, but there are really good ways you can try and purge trauma, and they're coming up with like healthy retreats and whether it's, you know, vibration or dance or, you know, writing it or going out in the forest and just doing those guttural full body screams, just like purging your body of everything. Yeah, there are some really great ways for sure.
What you said about the release, you're allowing your body, like the energy, everything that's stored in, you're giving it that avenue and that pathway to release. If not, our bodies really do store this trauma and all this emotional baggage, and it turns into body ailments. It turns into cancerous cells. They even say like the stress and these emotional and psychological wounds that we have that can really affect the body in a deep level, as well as, of course, we're talking about the psyche and everything. So in the beginning with the wacky tobacco, you did that for a while and you realized like I've got to go about it in a healthier way.
Well, yeah. And the line of work that I was doing and just the lifestyle I was living, and I was, you know, definitely on the other side of the law, the people that I knew and spent time with, you know, and that I could relate to, right? Because I found that the white picket fence people, I often found that I was not safe usually from the male gender, whether it's the father or the son or whatever. And I found that people on the wrong side of the law are pretty open about what you're going to get into or not, right? There's none of this fake frontier of, oh, we're this perfect little family, until you get behind the wrong closed door, at which point now you're going to be a potential victim. So I had a lot of angst at the time too. And then as I was starting to try and build like a different life, meet people that I could get along with and have a good relationship with that was healthy, you know, that was outside of drugs and crime and stuff. at that same time, about that same year, and I was doing it with the wrong person, but I didn't know this at the time. I wasn't really aware of like narcissism or when you're in an abusive relationship, it usually kind of starts out, they don't punch you in the face on the first date, right? They kind of put that off. So then it's like, oh, it's your fault. So I didn't realize I was doing it with the wrong person at the time. But at that same time, my mom passed away and left my siblings, who would have been like 12, 14, and 16. And at that same time, I had just found out I was pregnant. And so I became an overnight mom, like, you know, I think about 6 months after my mom passing away. And that left me the family matriarch, right? I was the oldest and I had to deal with that. And that was horrible. That was just horrible. But I ended up with kids, a bunch of kids. So I was 24 and I, you know, had no clue really, but I was trying to get a clue about living in the world in a healthy, good way, not with wacky tobacco, not with all. And all of a sudden I became a mom. Well, now I needed to do actually what the commune had been grooming me to do, be a good housewife and mother. But I wanted to do it where they could succeed in the world, right? I wanted them to go to a regular school where you get a regular diploma, you have the potential for college or trades or whatever you want to do, where you, you know, don't have teen pregnancy, yeah. You're not going to get into the drugs that I knew about, right? Like that sort of thing. And I was all of a sudden trying to navigate that as a parent. I didn't have time to think about my grief. I didn't have time to think about, you know, all the stuff I had gone through before and any of that trauma. I was busy every waking moment with either my newborn infant, the teenagers, because they're up late and, you know, they have all these things. I had no clue. I'd never been to a parent-teacher interview. I was so scared. I was like, I said to my husband, you got to help me. Like, what are they going to ask me? Is this like being sent to the principal's office?
Yeah,
like,
interrogate me.
Yeah, right? But it turns out, because the first one was for my brother for grade 7, and they were just like, oh, he's doing good at this, and he's really nice in class. And I was like, oh, that's what this is? Oh, I got this.
Right, yeah. Your mind could just really start turning upside down with all the things, the possibilities that could happen. What the heck?
Yeah, like I had no idea. And so I'm navigating diapers and bottles and, you know, that kind of thing, and just like, cook 3 meals a day and try and do it like you see them do on TV, because I saw it on TV, right? So you have breakfast with cereal and you have food where there's like meat and potatoes and a veggie, and I didn't know how to buy meat. I food poisoned my husband multiple times.
So he's a survivor too.
He was, yeah. Right? And so now then after that, everything was dry. It is so dry. It's going to be cooked an extra half an hour to an hour to make sure that it's okay.
You might just, it's like beef jerky.
Yeah. My brother said to me a couple years ago, he's like, I just realized you were growing up when you were raising us. I'm like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I was trying.
You were learning on the job.
Yeah. But that time, and I realized that, again, probably writing the book, like they saved me. Them choosing me, because they didn't have to, they chose me. They asked me to be their person, their guardian legally. And they saved me. They gave me a darn big grown-up purpose I had to try and do to the best of my ability. And it was no more about me and how I felt. There was no stupid choices left to be made. I had to figure it out.
And that you did.
Yeah,
did. As you said, you had no time to grieve. You had no time to worry about the things that you were dealing with. Did you feel like that was starting to, in certain ways, take a toll on you when you don't deal with that and you just let it kind of simmer in the background and it's still there, but you don't have time to focus on it? So I guess maybe in a way that could be beneficial. But sometimes, you know, life happens or something triggers it and then these emotions just resurface and it's like, oh boy, I still have some things to deal with that I haven't, you know, I haven't given myself or allowed myself the time to do so.
Absolutely. Oh, for sure. It doesn't go away. It doesn't magically heal itself. I'm lucky, I guess, that I'm such a obstinate feel the fear and take that leap kind of person. I divorced my abusive alcoholic husband right around when my siblings had finished high school and were moving into postgraduate kind of life. And yeah, I had grieving to do. I had healing to do. I had a world of things I had to figure out. And I did it. I did the crying. I did the self-reflection. I was really lucky. Again, having kids saved me. My biological children that I had were going to elementary school, and they, I signed them up for soccer because it sounded normal and healthy to me. And it wasn't expensive like hockey, and at like 5 a.m, so I thought I can do this on my minimum wage job.
Sign them up.
And I met some other moms, and bless other moms. You know, I made really good friends, and they were so supportive. You know, they were just like, hey, it's normal to have these feelings or these fears. Like, yeah, my mom died and I went through this, or because we all have a story, right? You can kind of share. And so I healed through friendship and through talk. And I looked for help. I looked for parenting classes, for counseling. I went and looked for groups for my kids, you know, kids who witness violence, groups like that. And I was referred to a self-help meetings. And so, and that was expensive. That's where I knocked heads, because I'm like, this is a lot like brain control. I get what you're trying to help with some things, but you're going a little too far.
Yeah.
So we had some arguments, me and the leader.
So some red flags started to show in some of those groups.
Yeah. And I started to argue, yeah. and he was like, why are you? And I'm like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. I see what you're doing here. Do you think that was the case, or you were just overly precautious because of your background?
It was a bit of both. So some people that I knew that did, because I went to two of those groups. I went to the, because it's in layers, kind of like a pyramid.
But it's good to question. I mean, I always say, I love to just emphasize the fact we need to question everything. And don't be so quick to just take this and drink the Kool-Aid because somebody is sitting there or standing there saying it on your favorite TV station, or they're wearing a suit, or they're sitting in this position of power. Just because they say something, you need to take it with a grain of salt.
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah. It don't matter where it comes from. Podcast, YouTube, AI, yeah. Somebody's, you know, rapping that they say this is healthy food. Like, don't believe anything.
Yeah.
Question everything.
Question everything, right.
You know, but also don't be afraid to try things. You know, you don't got to drink all the Kool-Aid, but maybe why don't you look at what's in the ingredients? Maybe some of it's good.
Yeah. No, right. No, that's right. You have to allow yourself to experience these things, and hopefully you have enough sensitivity, and you have enough intuition, and you have enough critical thought to where you're able to judge these experiences and make healthy choices and go through the world in that sense, instead of just being like a leaf blown in the wind. Any and everything is just pushing you that way, throwing you this way. It's like you have no ground, no foundation.
Well, and you know what? I figure as long as we don't stop trying, just keep trying, like try to learn new things, just keep trying, whether you're going towards a goal or you're going to, you know, try and create something and you fail and fail until you succeed, or you want to learn something. As long as we're continuing, you know, to do what feeds our soul and what is healthy and good for us, and not super detrimental for the rest of us around us, the rest of the people, you know, bear that in mind. I think it's when we stop, then we really need to worry, you know?
Yeah. Or so part of the journey, like life, that's like our soul's evolution. And it seemed like you were very adamant about trying everything. You weren't going to, if this door shut or it wasn't working here, you were going there. Okay, let's try this. This isn't really tasting so good. I gave it a shot, an honest effort, and let me try this out. But you were really concerned and trying to work out a lot of the things that were troubling you and ailing you. And that's encouraging to hear for anybody who feels like, you know, maybe one thing doesn't work or two things doesn't work and they just give up. But there are ways.
There are. And you know what? reaching out and asking and searching is, you know, that's the start, and you just keep going. Like, I was in my 30s when I started this because my 20s was kids. You know, my 30s, I could breathe, because then I had 2 instead of 5 kids. So shockingly, that's slightly easier.
Still a handful, huh?
Still a handful, but you know, I was downsizing, so.
Yeah, downsizing. That's right.
You know, but like, and I was doing this later in the game, asking all these questions, and we didn't have, maybe we had Google, I don't know. Like at that point in time, I would go to the library to use for email or whatever, right?
I remember those days.
Yeah.
Yeah, going to the library, yeah. To use the and then even to check out books, but then there was a time when the computers were just a thing and we didn't have one at the house, so you go to the library to use a computer.
Yeah, you get a little code and you get like half an hour.
You get half an hour, yeah. Then you have somebody over your shoulder looking at, are you done yet? I think you logged in a second time. Exactly. They tell the librarian on you.
Yeah. That's exactly it. But I mean, it's like, if you can do it, like there's nothing that should prevent us from trying, you know. Like, I mean, I was 45 years old when I went to back to school to become a nurse, an LPN. I wrote my book while I was working full time. And then while I did that, I also did some upgrading so that I could go to school, because I worked an admin job. It was a good job, but I wanted more. So I went to school, and I was 45 years old. I was older than my teachers. I was, I've had a real battle with perimenopause. It has not gone well.
Fighting a good fight.
Right. And so like brain fog and forgetting things. And so I'm going to school and I'm like, yeah, like, cause I'd be taking all my stuff. I'm hot. Right. the teacher's like, oh, I can't relate. I'm like, shut up. Like, that's not normal. Yeah. You're teaching us about this. You should be able to at least textbook relate.
So 45 and went back to school. That's what I'm talking. Like, there was no holding you back. I mean, you were going to go after it and make the best out of the rest of the years that you still have afforded to you. I mean, if we're not going to try and go ahead and try to make something out of it, we might as well just roll over and call it quits. I mean, what are we playing for?
Well, and that's just it. I have a goal. I have a dream that I see for life, where I actually don't have like people that need me the same anymore. And I'm like, how do I get that? Okay, here's some of the things I think that I could do. And I went for it. I'm not going to, you know what? If I would have failed and flunked out, which I didn't, because I'm working as a nurse, but if I would have, at least I tried. I could go back to my old job, but at least I tried, you know? And I'm so glad I did. It was one of the best things.
That's encouraging to hear. Your whole story in general is really encouraging. And I think that can help somebody who feels a little bit older in age and like, oh, no, I don't know if that's, you know, that's such a wise idea. Because sometimes it's scary also to leave something that you might be familiar with, a job or whatever it is that you've been doing for years, to try something new. You never know. There's a quote by Rumi, and she says something to the effect of, what if I fall? But then there's a reply, and it says, well, what if I fly? You know, you never know until you know. You have to give it an honest effort. And it seems like you were doing a lot of that throughout your life. I'm curious, I don't know if you talked about it, but what was that little brewing inside of you to want to write a memoir?
Well, it's not just a quick answer, that one. I loved writing when I was a little girl, but it was extremely discouraged. My mom didn't want me to write. That's in the book. That's just a whole thing. And then after, when I was a teenager flitting around, I used to write, you know, free verse and poetry and stuff and short stories. And one of the girls I had seen back when I was maybe 15 or 16, I had given her one of my writings and I signed it. And I said, keep this, cause someday I'm going to be a famous author. And then I learned later how different my upbringing was. And then I learned that apparently I'm stubborn, ask a lot of questions and really go for things.
A go-getter.
Yeah, and
And
so
there's nothing wrong with that.
when I actually sat down to write my story, it was because I wanted to share that, you know what, life is hard. We all have a story, but you can do it. Like, if I can do it, yeah, your trauma might be different, but I climbed through. Here's some of my things that helped, and this will be more in my second book, the how I did it. And I'm probably going to have like a free little self-help PDF to go with it. I've been working on that a bit on the
Oh,
side.
cool. Okay. So people could follow along and take some of these tools and see if it works for them or helps them
Yeah, with
out.
their own situation. Yeah, because I didn't have that and I wanted it and I needed that. Tell me how. Tell me how to meet a healthy person or how to get a healthy circle of friends or to get the support I need. Like, tell me the how, and I didn't know. Not that I necessarily know now, but I found some things that worked, you know. And so I was like, I want to share my story, you know, because you can do it. I did it. We can do this.
It come out pretty easy once you started writing it? Did it flow like the river?
No. Well, my second one is flowing better. The first one, no. I did a really good job trying to forget my life. I did a very good job trying to forget my life. And remembering trauma is not fun. And trying to write in a non-judgmental, non-victimized way, to be fair, because the people in the commune didn't, you know, well, some of the people in the commune definitely didn't set out with the plan to do this sort of thing to people like me. That wasn't their goal. Their goal was something completely different. So I wanted to be very fair in how I shared it, you know, and not just be pointing fingers and to try and just tell the story clearly. So bless my editor and bless my beta readers because they were so helpful. They were like, I don't understand this, or I need to know more. And so it was really helpful in just getting the story shared in a way that answered the questions and came out in a, like I said, I wanted to be very, very, try to be fair to the other people involved.
Just from you saying that already tells me that you've done a lot of self-reflection and some of your own inner work dealing with your inner dynamics, because to not be biased or to point the blame and to make, you know, to shed a bad light on some things, but then put a good light on other things, and to just come at it, try to come at it from a righteous and holistic way where you're giving a clear picture. But you're the one involved in it, and you were the one affected by a lot of things. That's really hard to do.
It took a while. Yeah, I spent about 5 years writing it, I think, on and off. I mean, I was working full time, and my kids are graduating high school, so I wasn't just sitting writing, right? But I definitely spent a good amount of time doing it, and then took it to my dear friend. She was an inspiration to me, and I dedicated the book to her, and I took it to her, and it was just like, this wouldn't be without you, you know? It was my gift. It was my gift to her.
And the title of it is Where I Belong. Was that kind of, you talked about it earlier, was just the fact you felt like you didn't fit anywhere. Is that kind of have something to do with it, or
Yeah, I
what's the
didn't
meaning
feel
behind the
like,
title?
well, where do I belong? Like, I didn't belong anywhere. I didn't belong in the commune. I didn't belong to a family. I didn't belong on the streets. I didn't belong to these hypocritical people that, you know, tried to save me, to put a jewel in their crown, so to speak. And
It's pretty much like exiled in a way. You were exiled, just X'd off in a lot of different ways. And yeah, left to fend for yourself and figure it out before ChatGPT and all these AI configurements.
Before all that. And
Yeah.
it was wild because I didn't, because of coming from the commune, I didn't understand that the cell phone was such a new exciting thing, like to go from a pager to a cell phone. I was just like, oh, there's one more thing
I
I got to
remember
learn.
the pagers. That just brings up something funny with the whole pager and how we would write with numbers like hello. You'd be able
Oh.
to And you thought you were the coolest thing when you got a pager. It's like, well, I can't do anything with it. I have to wait to use the phone to call it back. But just to get a buzz.
Yeah, feeling all cool that you wrote hello instead of putting a number in.
But you were talking about the cell phones. You didn't know it was such the advancements in technology.
Yeah, like there was huge advancements in the 90s, and it just went right over my head because to me, everything was new. Grocery stores and shopping and freedom and, I mean, everything was new.
Oh, wow.
So that's a computer, crazy. I'm like, okay, that's nice.
That had to be overwhelming. I mean, to just get flushed with all of this stuff, where you're like, where have I been at? What's going on here? This is a completely different world than I know.
Mm-hmm. And when people would meet me, they would, I went with people that were quite a bit older, like a few decades older than me usually would who I'd run with. And they'd be like, oh my God, you don't know the Yellow Brick Road? You have to see Wizard of Oz, you know? Or they'd be like, oh my God, you don't know this? You have to,
songs,
right?
Songs or any musicians, yeah. Nothing.
Yeah, all of it.
Wow. You know, there's some I've heard on the count of that, which you just explained with the uncertainties or it just being the overstimulation, it's too much. And sometimes that's a reason for some people to say, you know, I'm just going back. This is what, it's overwhelming. And there's also a fear with the freedom because now, not saying with you, but there are people that I've read their stories. Some people that is leaving North Korea, let's say, for instance, or coming out of prison doing 15 years or 20 years. And then now the responsibility of having to make their own choices, their own decisions, that could be so frightening that some of them wish that they just go back to where it was, where everything was told what to do, what time to go to bed, how your whole day was going to be planned out, that they just became accustomed to it. And the freedom was just overwhelming and it could be a fearful thing.
It can be. This is very trite, but I mean, it can be overwhelming to try and buy shampoo, you know, like, because there's an entire aisle just for shampoo. And that's just for any old one of us, not even someone that's come from trauma. I find I do really well with nature. I grew up in nature. I'll show you the cover of my book because it kind of shows a little bit. So this, I don't know if you can see the full cover, is a photo of my father and I.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Is that a,
that's a
that
teepee.
Looks pretty cool.
Yeah. We're camping right. In the winter. We built that teepee. So I grew up in nature. We went further away from the commune to go spend time in nature on our times off. So now, like, I go kayaking or paddleboarding or hiking or, you know, where the sound is the wind going through the leaves or the chipmunks or the, you know, the birds. I mean, I do it with care. I take bear spray with me, usually a buddy, although I tend to run slower, so I'm going to be the one getting eaten.
Just trip them. Right. Or trip her.
But no. And I my heart goes out to people that live in big cities that maybe don't have as easy an ability to find nature. But I found even as a teenager, and you know, like there was Mont Royal, a huge, huge mountainous park in Montreal when I was there. I found that just very soul restoring to just go lie on the grass, put your feet in the dirt, in the grass, hug a tree, you know, and just get away from everything and reground yourself because it's super overwhelming when you have to make your own decisions.
Yeah, that's scary. I'm just still going back and putting myself in that predicament. If I was 13, would I, or 11, 12, 13, would I be able to, I don't think, I don't think I'd be able to make that move. I mean, that takes a lot of guts, a lot of just determination, grit, and courage to be willing to face whatever lies ahead, but just to separate yourself from that situation because it really, really isn't healthy anymore to stick around. And wow, you made that choice and got in the wind and lived to talk about it and even laugh about it and joke about it years later. Never mind all of the bears, the mountain lions, the we're talking about even predators that walk upright too, men, women, these adults, and you're in a a whole different world. And with all of the technologies and just everything that comes with it, the brand new world is open with so many things that you had no idea about. And then even probably can feel a bit like an outcast because you're the weird one, if you want to call it that. Like, you don't know about this. You don't know this movie. You don't know. And then kind of feel like, you know, you're out of place with that and looked at differently because of it. Sometimes people can be cruel like that and say, wow, what, where have you been at? Under a rock?
Yeah.
Almost.
Oh, yeah. Those normal questions when you get to know someone, where are you from? Where's your hometown? Where'd you go to school? I got some pat lies if I didn't want to have a real conversation.
Yeah. Wow. So it was it hard to really make some genuine connections on account of that?
Well, it's kind of a choice. I tend to go with how my gut feels. When I meet someone, I tend to get a feeling about them or not, like their voice, how they look. And I don't mean the clothes they're wearing. I mean, just how they present their emotional self in their body. And that would, and also the strength that I had, because it takes strength to share and to be honest. So if I was exhausted emotionally, I wouldn't tell the truth unless I really felt a connection to that person, that I felt that there could be something real there, would to determine how I'd answer that. And it still does. It still does.
Yeah.
Because it's just, I mean, my book is out there.
Have you got any feedback in general with the book? And have you heard from people who've read it and it really resonated with them?
Yeah, that I had such an outpouring of support. My book launch, I was shocked. There was about 75 people there. I was totally shocked at the support. Yeah. People came from
75 people there. Yeah. I mean, that's no small potatoes.
Yeah, I didn't expect that. I mean, I expected a handful, you know, but people came from like 2-3 hour drive to come out. And since then, I occasionally go to markets and as an author and have a table, and people have driven. They're like, oh, I'm finally in the province, you know, or whatever. And I drove in from wherever to get it, like to get a signed copy. And yeah, people have been just like, thank you, that it helped them see their childhood. Or I had one woman, I had been really good friends with her husband when we were like 6 or something. And probably 6 years old, we were friends. And she said, your book helped me understand so much about my husband, because he doesn't have the words to maybe share some of this, just the indoctrination and the fear and the hellfire that you're going to face, you know, and then just trying to deal with life after, outside of that, like trying to raise a normal family, but you have that upbringing from birth. I've just felt an overwhelming sense of love and support from people that it helped them, you know, with what they grew up with.
That's a beautiful thing. And that can be more rewarding than any gold or any check, any blank check, when you have genuine responses like that with something that you wrote and you're just sharing your heart and some of your life's experiences, and it's touched, it sounds like, a lot of people. And that's the power of word too, where you're able to be that voice and that expression for some people, like you said, with this lady and her husband, he's not able to voice it or express it the way he would like to. And you're that medium for those people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those that have been through it, those that are dealing with it, and maybe even helping someone who's still in it and giving them the courage to, you know, pack up and just part ways with something that is an unhealthy relationship, an organization you're involved with, or just anything that is just keeping you from actualize your full potential or to be something better than what you're told that you're capable of being. Because sometimes in those groups, you have a role to play in, and you're not supposed to stray from that. That's the role you're playing to the end. This is your ticket, and you're going to ride that to the very end. And don't you dare think that you can do this or do that, because that's not that's not in this show. Maybe next go around. But
yeah, no, I don't have a punch card with that ticket. I'm like, no. that does not have my name on it.
Okay, so you have your first book, the memoir, the Where Do I Belong? You wrote that a couple of years ago, and then now you're in the middle of writing your second. This is the part two where you're going to map out the ways that what's helped you, like tools and things that helped you along the way to get through this, get past it, overcome it, heal, move forward, that kind of thing. Or
yeah. That'll probably more like the second half. The first half is just the 10 years of like five kids. It's kind of a blur. So, and then after that, how I managed to, you know, to leave an extremely unhealthy relationship and to build a better life for my children and, you know, to go to school and to, cause I mean, I would have been homeless and on welfare was what I was facing at the time. And, that wasn't going to happen. And, yeah, just how I managed to get from that to working as a nurse, I guess, you know, and not let anything hold me back.
Yeah.
You know, where there's a will, there's a way is something I've always thought.
True indeed. And sometimes when you're put in these kind of positions, like when you go through certain things in life, it's almost like that's a way for life and the world to help you rise to the occasion and find pieces of yourself that you didn't know existed, strengths that you never knew you had, abilities that you never knew were possible of attaining. And it was all because you were put in a position to where this from inside of you was like, it was a catalyst for that to come out and for you to express it. Some people, they allow that to happen. They dig within and they find that and they open up to it. And others, they allow themselves to be swallowed whole by the situation. And it seems like you were the latter, where you, that was your ability to where the creativity, all the sparks of the ways that you were able to express yourself, the overcoming, the strength, the triumph, all that came from, unfortunately, being raised in a condition that isn't ideal. But with that, you were able to find, in that darkness, you were able to find that light and that torch to bring out and to share with other people and those around you and strangers you never met, but just on account of you sharing your story also. So
I think it's, I'm so fortunate for the genetics that I have. My mom and dad, you know, they weren't born and raised in a commune like that. And I like to think that maybe my dad would have left and I have definitely some of their personality, their positivity, that not give up, that keep going, you know, feel the fear and do it anyways, that quest for continual, you know, growth, emotional growth and knowledge. And I mean, honestly, one of my biggest fears would be just to stop and settle in place in life and not continue to try to become a better person. As many hiccups as my mom had as a parent to me, she was a pretty amazing woman. And I definitely attribute the woman I am to the parents that I had and what they created in me.
That's a beautiful thing. And you lost them. You lost them both at a very early age.
Oh yeah.
You said your mother passed when you were 22, 23.
Yeah. 23. She died 10 years after my dad died. Yeah.
Wow. I know it's been years and years have passed, but is there anybody in that commune that you still haven't, some kind of connection with, or you still keep in touch with, or there's
not in the commune, but those of us that have walked away and you know, found
life after
a happy, yeah, life after life in life the world. Yep. And honestly, Facebook, I really appreciate Facebook just for bringing together these people, because we're all over the globe, and you know, we can touch base or be supportive. How are you doing? Or so I'm in contact with people like that, but nobody's still at the commune. And I don't actually physically name the names of the communes or what towns they're in, because they've either evolved into something else or they're still going. And some of those people are still living there and drinking that grape drink and full on believing. So, I don't want to get sued. So I'm like, so I, all the names are changed except for the woman I dedicated it to, because they'd have to come forward and be upset and say, this is me.
When you were involved in it, and like, again, I said this has been years that passed, but when you were involved in it, it was controlled. They were watching what you did, where you went, how you conducted yourself. Did they still, you know, you hear about some organizations or some cults like Scientology, or there's other ones that are slipping my mind right now. I'm sure there's a handful and some that aren't even as mainstream or known as these other ones, but where years after somebody separates themselves, they're still being harassed. They're still being sought after. I don't, did you deal with anything like that for some time?
I did in the beginning, but I was quite young. They were able to bully me a bit because I was, you know, I was a teenager. They weren't too happy when I went to court against that person. But I ended up, like, I knew the Bible like the back of my hand. And I could have an argument and throw back their stuff at them quite well.
Was it the Christian Bible? Was it the Christian Bible? Yeah.
The Christian Bible.
Okay.
And then Ellen G. White. They really, really followed Ellen G. White.
Oh, I'm not familiar with him. Ellen G. White.
No. Yeah, she, you not missing anything. She told me. Whoever owns that foundation is incredibly wealthy because her writings are well sought after. She was considered a prophetess. So a little backstory on Ellen G. White. When she was young, she was bullied and a girl threw a rock and hit her in the face and she was in a coma. And I want to say this was in the 1800s. And so when she came out of the coma, she was never quite the same. And she, I don't know if you're familiar, there's those family Bibles that are quite large and they go on a coffee table. They're very heavy. She would go into a trance and she would hold this Bible out in one arm and have been in a trance for like an hour. And then she would come to and would write it down and it was the Word of God. And now there's all these books with the Word of God coming through her. And this is where the diet, the clothes, the what age women should be or men should be when they marry, the segregation, everything came through. And so that's what our leaders really aspired to and followed. So not only the Bible, but her visions from God that interpreted it for us.
Okay, yeah, I was not familiar of Ellen G. White. So that's, you learn something new every day. But, well, okay, so they didn't, you said just in the beginning when you were young, but after that, they just let you be.
Yeah, they asked if they could take my name off the church records and whatever, and I was like, whatever floats your boat.
Yeah.
That makes you happy.
Right. So they also keep the church records too. Yeah, I've heard of more Mormons or Jehovah's Witness talk about the same thing, that they had to write some type of letter of separation and say, you know, I'd like, and I was, wow, you have to, they expect you to write something so they can now no longer consider you a part of that, the organization. That's pretty intense. That's
like that. But yeah, they have the records of baptisms and they just want to wipe you off, that you're no longer a member.
Wipe your name from the book.
I was like, if you wanted to make this phone call to ask that question, if that's what you needed to do today, by all means, you go ahead and remove my name. Like, but they never harassed me really. And they certainly weren't helpful when I was raising my siblings. Other than not being happy that I took them, they definitely weren't there to help. So
thank goodness for you taking guardianship over them. But like you said, also, they're the ones that saved you and helped you. It was a mutual thing where you both helped each other.
We're really close, the three of us. I'm so fortunate that I have them.
Sarah, this has really, really been a interesting and inspiring, and I'm not just saying that, but it's just great to hear everything that you went through, everything that you encountered, the close calls, the fear and leaving at such a young age, but you still came out beaming with light. I'm sure you're a joy to everybody that you have around your life, and you're that beacon of light that the world needs. So even in your corner, wherever you're at and how you're going about your day-to-day business, I mean, it's a blessing, I'm sure. that people have you around, and that's great to hear. You know, I'm really thankful that you were open to do this and to share and open up your book, share some of your story. I know you have another one on the way, and I'm going to leave the links for all of your contacts and information so people can reach out to you. They can get their hands on the book if that's something they want to look into, read, and just see what else you have going on. All the good lines, the good words, and the good tools that you're also going to be providing for people. Yeah, that's a beautiful thing and a great work. And I'd like to give you opportunity also, if you were kind enough to share a lot of your time, your morning with us. Appreciate that again. But if you have any final words or anything you'd like to leave off with, feel free.
Just, you know, don't give up. Reach out for a hug if a person needs it. Don't give up. That's most important, right? We're all really important. Mm-hmm. And even if you feel alone, you're not. Shoot me a message. I'll answer.
Right on. Every day is a new day for the wise man or the wise woman. So, I mean, it's as long as you still have breath in your lungs, there can be something done with that. Don't give up. There's this old song I used to like. I joke around and I always sing it sometimes when I feel like I'm in the dumps. I'm like, just give it one more day. And so, yeah, right on. No, thank you again, Sarah. Thank you so much. All the best to you and yours.
Thank you. Same to you.
Where do I belong? Maybe you've asked yourself that once or twice. I know I have on several occasions. If you're interested in getting a copy for yourself or even as a gift for someone you feel might appreciate the read, and I'm talking about Where Do I Belong, the memoir that was written by Sarah, our guest today, you can get it in print or as an ebook, and I've linked that in the show notes. You'll also find all the other ways that you can reach out to, you can connect, you can contact Sarah if this is something you would like to do. At 13 years old, a little girl decided enough was enough and took her chances with the elements, wandering off into a world she knew nothing about. In northern BC, cold, in the dark, alone. You've got bears, you've got two-legged Kai, you've got four-legged Kai. And through this, in the midst of this, pedaling on her bike for 10 kilometers on a long dirt road. Those are extreme conditions for anybody, let alone a 13-year-old girl. And not to make it a laughing matter, but it kind of reminded me of Dorothy with the lions and tigers and bears, oh my, on the yellow brick road off to see the wizard. Sarah was on her own yellow brick road to a place that was unfamiliar, that was scary, that was foreign, but also a place that she had the potential to experience new possibilities and new freedoms, reminding us that rewards do, in fact, come with risks sometimes. Through Sarah's trauma, the tragic death of her father, losing her mother at 23, and all the other ways life can shake one's world upside down. Sarah, she's turned a new leaf, found a new song to fill her heart with, and is enjoying a new chapter in her life, and even helping others see the value in themselves and reminding them that if she did it, there's no reason you can't do it as well. I pulled this quote from Sarah's website, and it reads, "Mountains were made to climb, weakness allowed to be strengthened, obstacles were designed to be overcome." And what you shared with us today, I know it was only a brief peek into your life, but nonetheless, that brief peek into your life showed every bit of what that quote encompasses. Sarah, you are a giant amongst us. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Let me know how you feel. There's a couple of ways you can get in contact with us, a couple of different mediums that you'll be able to find us. We're on the YouTubes, we're on Reddit, we're on Twitter, and of course the home base, hometown is where it's at, giantsamongstus.org. Again, that's giantsamongstus.org. And those are the places where you can reach out to us. You can let us know where you're listening from, how you're listening to the show, and anything else you want to break bread and talk about. It's always good to hear back from you. And this is something that I truly enjoy doing. This is one of the joys in my life, is to connect with people and to hear not just their struggles and their failures and their hiccups, but how they were able to get past that, to transcend it, to rise above it, and to start creating something more meaningful and valuable for themselves that have just helped them overall as a human being. We're embracing what it is to be human, the raw emotions, the inner constellations that make us unique. And we're going to continue to grow, to evolve, and to work towards becoming what we were meant to be. As cliche as it sounds, and like I opened it up in the very beginning, self-discovery isn't a destination, but a lifelong journey. Who's up for the ride? So we're going to pick it back up and do this again real soon. If you want to reach out to us, if you want to contact us for any and everything, well, just about any and everything, the links will be in the show notes. You guys be safe out there. You be sane and be the change you'd like to see. Of course, before I wrap this up, I want to remind you that if you would like to be a part of the show and share your story, or even a story of someone in your life that has impacted you in a positive way, you could always reach out to us via email. We'd be happy to connect. Until next time, and very soon, peace. Do-wop, do-wop, do-wop,
do-do-do-wop, do-wop. Looking for a sign to know I'm on the right road. Ain't seen no signs since.